Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all around the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Sologi. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so it is October 18th, 2024. We are now officially less than 20 days until the election, and it cannot get here fucking sooner because I am sick of this shit. As you can probably guess, we're going to have some stuff related to the upcoming election here tonight that we will be discussing, but we also have some other stuff that we'll be talking about. Among other things, the ongoing war between Israel and Hamas reached a major milestone this week. Weirdly enough, that's pretty much the only Israel-related story we've got. A lot of what we got this week is concerned again with the election. We've also got some news about the ongoing legal troubles with Sean P. Diddy Combs, even more awful shit about him has seen the light of day now. Obviously years after it should have been, this guy's been getting away with this shit for a long time, and for whatever reason, it's only now that he's finally facing consequences for it. But, and of course, we've also got our entertainment section. We'll be talking about some trailers and some announcements about some upcoming programs. And we got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off as always. Start us off at the very beginning, as is tradition, talking about all the things we've been doing up to this point this week. And this is also a tradition. We start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Well, it's been a pretty nice week for feeling like fall. Mm-hmm. We've had a number of days here in the, let's say, 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. Those not felt super hot or anything, so that's been quite nice for what I should feel like this time of year. Though we're looking to get back up into the 70s here for the next handful of days, so that's going to be fun, you know. But, for things I've been doing, been watching some Halloween movies, particularly the Halloween Town movies that Disney made quite a while ago. Apparently, I've only seen the first two movies, but thought the third one was a series because it's called Halloween Town High, which seems like the name of a TV spinoff series. But yeah, it ends up being the third movie where having essentially broken the way the portals between the two worlds have worked, so people can kind of go back and forth as they want to. Marnie gets a proposal to, I don't know, the people running Halloween Town, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they allow there to be like a essentially like a dozen students from Halloween Town High to come to the human world.
Yeah.
Kind of have like a cultural exchange of sorts. So the people, the humans, do not know what's up, because they're in sort of human costumes, essentially, to survive there versus being in their natural forms. Unfortunately, they find that there is some fuckery going on, and they have to deal with whatever that means. You know? Pretty fun for what it is, but not as good as the others. But it has the one kid that's in the High School Musical movies. I forget if there's anybody else notable in there, but yeah, like beyond that, obviously you still have the big names in there, like Judith Hogue as the mom, who people may know from like the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie as April. Debbie Reynolds is the grandma, who is obviously the mother of Leia. I forget her actress's name. But yeah, notable figure in her own right. There's a fourth one that does not feature the actor playing Marnie. It's a different actress, so that's weird. I might check that out. Mm-hmm. They'll just kind of see where they went for a fourth one. But yeah, pretty solid. Mm-hmm. For other things that have been going on, I've been watching, or I watched the first episode of Dragon Ball Daima.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like this is on a handful of services. You can get on Crunchyroll and whatnot. Netflix is getting it on Fridays mm-hmm. every week versus Tuesday or Wednesday for like Crunchyroll, I think. But
mm-hmm.
The first episode is kind of a setup episode as it's dealing with the new king of the demon realm
mm-hmm.
who, with the death of Dabura, this is set like during or slightly after the Buu arc of DBZ.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of play a bunch of clips from those episodes, sort of showing, remind you like what happened for the premise mm-hmm. of this show. You get to see like Dabura there. They see the Saiyans and are quite perturbed by the notion that there are powerful beings in the outer world, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
As they seem to think that the demon world has all the most powerful beings, and sort of go through and see Babidi. Babidi and Dabura are they left the demon realm to go to Earth and try to resurrect Boo and sort of take over the universe or whatever they were planning. And with him being dead and Bobby being dead, they kind of go and notice, you know, keep watching how things go. Mm-hmm. And Boo gets defeated and all that. And they're like, we need to deal with whatever's going on here. And they have their own set of Dragon Balls in the demon world. Mm. They're guarded by robots, and the new king here does not want to deal with that. So he decides to go to Earth and use their Dragon Balls to make his wish. Which, as if you know the premise of the show, his wish is to make all of the, as he calls it, all of the people that fought Boo, turn them into kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess also the kids that fought him into babies. So that's kind of where it ends. It's just them being transformed. So I assume the second episode's gonna pick up from there. They figure out like what's next, but seems pretty decent so far, but it's not been really too much of a not too much like overwhelming anything there.
Mm-hmm.
So here's where it's set and kind of what's going on. Time to wait for another week for the next episode. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Seems solid. It's just Japanese dub right now, so no English dub yet.
Mm-hmm.
For that. I know they are doing like a special thing in theaters to have like the first three episodes with the dub for that show, so mm-hmm. that could be fun, but I think it's in November at some point, so that's a ways off. But yeah, that seems fun. And then I decided to start Steven Universe.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a Cartoon Network show that I guess Max has taken down at some point recently.
Yeah, it's weird shit's happening is all I'll say.
And they, which was like one of the shows whose character they have featured in like branding banners on the Max service, but they had to change as a result of that. And a few other Cartoon Network shows, I think they got dropped from the service. But luckily those are on Hulu, and coincidentally Disney Plus, if you have Hulu as well. Mm-hmm. So I decided to start watching it there, which is a little weird because all the episodes end with the little Cartoon Network jingle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit weird, but the nice thing is it's kind of breezy to get through because every episode is essentially a half episode, as they would take these two like 11-minute episodes and pair them together for a full 30-minute time block. So it makes for a really nice kind of breezy pace. I'm like 20 some episodes in now, mm-hmm. Which is nice. So far it's been fun. It's been goofy, which I was kind of expecting. It's very much, if I had to describe it in like anime terms, it's a slice of life shonen.
Yeah.
Usually Steven being like, well, what's going on today?
Yeah.
And never having like school or anything. There's apparently no school in his town. So you got like kids and teens kind of just working jobs and such.
Yeah.
Steven just wakes up in his house that's essentially next to the place that the Crystal Gems live or whatever they do.
Yeah.
Because they just like show up every so often after either being away on a mission or getting ready for a mission or doing something else. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, oh, what's going on? And sometimes is aware of what's going on. Sometimes they tell him and he just ignores it.
Yeah.
It's just like, sure, that's a lot of things you're saying. I'm not picking up any of this. Mm-hmm. And we'll inevitably do the thing you say not to do.
Oh, yeah.
That's like his whole thing. As he's trying to get a handle on his power, he has a gem from his mom,
mm-hmm.
Who was one of the Crystal Gems, but she has passed away or something.
Mm.
They don't really go into it, but he's a halfy, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad, for whatever reason, I don't know what's up with his dad. His dad is just like not allowed to be near where the Crystal Gems are at because he's not magically mm-hmm. inclined or anything. So he lives in a van. And it's just, he's a very weird looking fellow.
Because
mm-hmm. He is balding, but has, you know, the ring of hair, and then has that grown out to down his back.
Yep.
Kind of a very odd look.
Mm-hmm.
Is portrayed as like a loser, I guess, at least at this point, having mm-hmm. lost his wife and his son being more important than him. He's just kind of like a weird dude, like scrounging around for money, I guess.
Yeah.
It's weird trying to get the lay of the land of what this town is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it makes for a very fun show. Lots of wild stuff happens. We'll get into some fun episodes, like one where one of the kids at the donut shop ends up claiming that he has a back injury mm-hmm. and goes home. So Steven takes over, and in the process of kind of getting training, listens to or watches the training video that is patterned after like classic 80s like Wendy's training videos that had mm-hmm. songs to them. And all that, like, catchy little songs. So he's kind of enjoying that whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
So in the process, uses this incredibly spicy ingredient on a donut to get back at him.
Mm.
When they find out he was lying about having an injury.
Mm.
Has to, like, save his life in the process because the dude's, like, internals are just on fire as a result. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, there's stuff going on. Which is fun. So, but yeah, that is a really fun show.
Yeah.
I do get into some weird stuff, like when Steven finds out that the gems don't age. They're kind of yeah. immortal beings of a sort.
Yeah.
So they don't celebrate birthdays or anything. He tries to throw birthday parties for all of them, and none of them are excited by it. So he kind of gets depressed by it in a way mm-hmm. that his gem ends up activating and like making him grow older
mm-hmm.
As he gets more depressed, and then finds out that is happening and starts freaking out. And then it just kind of keeps going back and forth as they try and figure out how to solve this problem. It's a lot of that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. Weird stuff happens and they figure out how to solve it mm-hmm. and eventually do, as the theme song suggests.
Mm.
But yeah. It's a fun, weird, wacky, nonsense show.
At first.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of it, and I'll tell you, much like with, like, Adventure Time or, like, Gravity Falls, It starts out like weird and wacky, but there's a lot more going on underneath the surface that they get into later on. Like, for example, you know, you talked about like what the crystal gems are. Why are they even there? There's a reason they're there, and you'll find out what it is. You'll also find out that they've been down there a lot longer than you think they are. Like, by that I mean like hundreds of years. They've actually been down there for a long time. So much so that they've actually changed the course of history once or twice. But yeah, there's a lot more going underneath the surface, and you'll find out what it is. And you also find out, you know, who Steven's mother is and what happened to her. But yeah, just trust me. Like, it's a pretty fun show starting out. It gets increasingly much better as it goes. But yeah, so what else?
That's been pretty much it for stuff I've been watching. For games I've been playing, I was playing some of the new classics that were on PlayStation Plus Premium, and Dino Crisis is one of them. Which in Capcom form you cannot purchase, so a lot of the Dino Crisis fans that were hoping to just stroll in and pay, you know, $10 or whatever for that version, found out like, oh, they didn't allow that for some reason. Which is the same thing they did with Resident Evil Director's Cut for the PS1. That still does not have a way to actually purchase it, so
yeah.
But yeah, I was starting to play this one, and it seems pretty neat. Control stuff is weird. I'm not a Resident Evil fan, especially of the PS1 games. They're just weird to control. And the puzzle stuff like is can be a bit esoteric for me to try to figure out without a guide. So I kind of went to this, had a guide. It kind of charmingly as a game facts guide mentioned like, oh, you should be having this guide at this font at this resolution on your, you know, Windows XP system, and all that. So I'm like, oh, Jesus, this is old. And it explains a bunch of stuff in there that's pretty good. But with all the PS1 emulation stuff here, you get rewind, you get save states, all that kind of stuff. You can even remap the controls, which I might end up doing. Because while it's fine, the game has like three different control setups that all double up one of the face buttons. So there's two of the face buttons will do the same action or set of actions that are tied to it. And they don't, they didn't, I guess, at any point be like, maybe we should map something else here. So I might try remapping some things, maybe try and put the aim and shoot buttons on like the left trigger, right trigger kind of thing. Maybe that'll work out pretty well. Even though you're not really doing that for in the same way that you would in a normal game, but I also like to kind of walk around holding the aim button because it looks cool and you can do it versus Resident Evil games where you couldn't move while you're aiming. And so it's X to, you know, open up doors, also X to shoot. So I end up just holding that instinctively and like, okay, I want to go in this door. Boom, gunshot. Luckily, I can just rewind and undo it, so it's not that big of a deal. Though I can also I've been playing on easy mode, so I don't think there's going to be as much of an issue with ammo or anything like that. So, especially because I think they give you the three main guns up front. I think there was a guy on the guide that's mentioned like, oh, there's this box and you can get the shotgun here. Like the first save station. And I was like, there's nothing here. But I already had the shotgun. So I was like, okay, maybe that's something that's easy mode must give you it. Combat's been pretty decent, but also I'm on easy mode. So That probably helps. I'm just killing every dinosaur I see.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that they'll respond when the game deems it necessary.
Mm.
But yeah, it definitely looks like a PS1 game, because like the first guy your character's hanging out with, his face just kind of shifts in that PS1 kind of way. I was like, oh no, this man's ugly, and he's just far enough away that his polygons are shifting to make him uglier. The weird issue I have with it is the voice audio is low, and there's no options to change that. There's only options for sound effects and background music. I turned up sound effects thinking, well, that might be the closest to voice audio, but I end up just having to sit there and kind of deal with it. Otherwise, I don't want the other bits of audio bumped up like that. So, yeah. But yeah, it seems pretty solid. Not too spooky just yet, at least. But yeah, pretty solid. Got some stuff that you can definitely tell. It's a game that learned a lot from Resident Evil games, while not going for the same type of scares. But does have its spooky moments, so. But yeah, that's Dino Crisis, and I played a little bit of Siren, which seems to be an upgraded version of the remaster they did on the PS4. So if you have owned that already on the PS4, it's a free upgrade. But otherwise, it's running that through the PS2 emulator to get the rewind and all that with it, which is pretty nice as a thing. I played like the first two stages, which don't really have much going on, but definitely needed a guide because I didn't understand what was going on for the most part. Because the first one, it basically breaks up this game into quick little moments, essentially, in these smaller areas. And like the first one, you're watching this kid that runs upon this weird meeting in the forest, and they happen to notice him because he makes a noise. And the cop chases after him, and they both fall into this pit. And literally, all you have to do is run into this hike, grab this key, and get into the truck and drive off. But the way this game works is you have to grab the key, walk up to the door. You have to get this like option, like action menu up. It's like, oh, you got to unlock the door. And then you got to open the door, you get in the car, and then you got to use it to put the key in the ignition and then to turn it on and then drive away. So it kind of makes that like a weird tedious thing, which I guess is probably more because it's more of an adventure game style setup versus an action game where you just get the key and then just get in and do whatever you need to from there. But yeah, this one just kind of changes that up a bit. And then they have the whole system of sight jacking, which is I guess basically what it sounds like. You essentially like psychically link with another character or enemy's mind and kind of look at what they're looking at. So you can, I guess, like see surroundings and see like what they might be able to see as far as like avoiding enemies and whatnot. So there's like stealthy elements to it. It seems all right for what it is, but the vibes about it are a bit much for me, so I'm I've already deleted it. I'm not gonna keep playing, but seems neat for what it is. I assume it will probably bring the second game over, which never got a release here in North America. It did get an EU release, which means that it's in English enough for to release in America. So I assume that will happen at some point. Otherwise, I don't know why you go through all that trouble for that remaster. But that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I am still playing Metaphor Refantasio. I've gotten pretty deep into it now. I've actually I've gotten almost every party member up to this point. I've still got one seat left that needs to be filled. I have an idea of who it might end up being. But yeah, I've gotten plenty of those. And yeah, it's just, again, this game still manages to find ways to surprise me. That said, there is one little twist that they end up showing up that, honestly, in hindsight, I kind of saw coming a mile away. And I'm not sure if I think it's genius that they went this route or incredibly fucking stupid. But, you know, it could still work. It just depends on how the story goes from here. But yeah, the games, like the monster designs and the design of the humans especially, still continues to amaze me. And especially later in the game, there's definitely some really like neat puzzles that they throw at you. But again, there's also a lot of it that's very similar to Persona, pretty much. And yeah, it's still a lot of fun. I still have to like find ways to tear myself away from the game just so, you know, I can like go to bed or whatever, because it really is that fun. Right now, this game is definitely in my contenders for, like, Game of the Year. I doubt it's going to beat Astrobot, because that game is almost certainly going to be my Game of the Year. Unless there's some dramatic changes over the next couple months. But, yeah, that game is legitimately amazing. I love it. And as per usual, you know, books, I'm still going through the Ship of the Line. That's one of the Horatio Hornblower books. I'm nearing the end of it, and after that I'll be going on to Flying Colors, which is the immediate sequel to it. I got both of them because both of them were actually jointly awarded this major prize for fiction back in the 1940s. But yeah. And still loving music, still, you know, listening to a lot of bluegrass, because, you know, it just feels like a good time of the year to be listening to a lot of bluegrass. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's fall, it's getting colder, you know, there's pumpkins and shit everywhere. It just sounds like it would be a thing. Other than that, the major thing that happened this week is I had a job interview with this company that I won't name the company, but one of the things they're getting into is they're needing new billers and coders for veteran affairs stuff. And it was going to be like an entry level thing. And I was like, hey, you know what? Might as well give it a shot. It was like over Google Meets. Yeah, it went pretty good, or at least I think it went pretty good. But yeah, that's pretty much everything for me this week. So, Chris, you got anything you want to add before we move on?
Nope.
Alrighty then. Well then, with that, it is now time to move on to everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And one of the subjects that I love watching about or reading about or even talking about is the French Revolution. Mostly because we make the joke all the time on here of, you know, when a bunch of rich people in the government do something incredibly stupid that in hindsight that really doesn't make any goddamn sense, except for the fact that it further enriches the wealthier ruling classes. And we always make the joke, do you want the French Revolution? Because this is how you get the French Revolution. But the thing about the French Revolution is that other than being just an absolute bloodbath, which it 100% was, and the results that came after it was arguably of even worse bloodbath than the one that came before it, there was a lot of really weird shit that happened during the French Revolution that only makes sense if you understand the context in which it happened and the areas that it came into existence in during the time it was happening. For example, did you know that during the French Revolution, the French Republic actually had a state religion? Now, to explain why this happened, here's what you need to know. Up until the time of the French Revolution, France was largely a highly Catholic country. And to a certain extent, it still is very culturally Catholic. But until the French Revolution, the church was heavily involved in French politics. And not only was it heavily involved in French politics, it was also a major benefactor of French politics. Many, you know, bishops and archbishops and pontificates and basically all the major parts of the church led very lavish lives because of the way that the Ancien Régime, I know I probably butchered that, but the ancient regime or whatever they used to call it, operated was the church managed to get a lot of state financial access. And that, of course, was also the, shall we say, quote unquote, voluntary tithes that they got from the lay peoples of France. So by the time that the French Revolution was kicking off, there was a lot of debate on how the church was going to be involved here. Now, these days, anybody who goes to France knows that they have these really strong laicity laws of secularism, where if you go, for example, if you go to a school in France, you are not allowed to wear any kind of religious iconography or clothing while you're there. That goes from everything to, you know, cross necklaces to yarmulkes to Stars of David to hijab, you know, headwear or any kind of Muslim related headwear, nothing like that. A lot of this comes back to the French Revolution because one of the major issues with the French Revolution was trying to essentially kneecap the type of state power that the Catholic Church had in France. And of course, both of these things sort of went hand in hand with, you know, the monarchy, of which, you know, obviously at that time it was, I think, Louis XV, who was king of France at the time. So obviously when the revolution happened, they immediately realized that they were going to need something to essentially, if not necessarily outright replace the Catholic Church, to try and supplant it, for in importance. So one of the things you got to know about the French Revolution, it was largely a lot of its main players were heavily inspired by, you know, the Enlightenment. And one of the big things with the Enlightenment was this concept called deism. This basically most Enlightenment intellectuals of the era, they would not say that they were atheists, but they would say that they believed in an impersonal God figure. They called it, they would usually use the thing of like God as watchmaker, in that God was the person who made the world, set it to motion, and then, I don't know, I guess fucked off to do whatever. So more or less, they, you know, their religious ideas were, of course, you know, considered, compared to, you know, the ideas of the Catholic Church, extremely heterodox. So the French Revolution happens, the monarchy is gone, the French Republic is established, and as everybody probably knows, within a couple of years, everything kind of went sideways, because, among other things, some members of the French Revolution had this bright idea of, hey, let's try and invade Austria. That'll be fun. It was a really stupid idea, I should just point out, extremely stupid. It basically started what was called the War of the First Coalition, where the Austrians ended up teaming up with other members of the Habsburg dynasty and tried to invade France. Now, they didn't succeed, because, you know, for one thing, the French at the time had a little-known Corsican general by the name of Napoleon Bonaparte on their side. But Because of that, it suddenly meant that France was essentially surrounded by enemies. On top of that, there was also these little civil disputes that would start happening in the country. Probably the most infamous is known as the Revolt of the Vendee, which was a counter-revolutionary revolt that happened in a little area of France called the Vendee, mostly because of the secularist things that the Parisians and the French Republic were trying to do. It's complicated, so I won't get into here. All that you really need to know is that by the point this was happening, France was really in an incredibly troubled state. And as anybody who knows anything about the French Revolution, one of its main downfalls is that because it became increasingly more surrounded and somewhat more insular, it eventually grew more and more authoritarian, to eventually the point that the Democratic Republic that they had originally wanted eventually had to declare martial law and then handed over government, more or less government power, more or less to what's called the Committee of Public Safety. That eventually led to the Reign of Terror. But for our purposes, what we need to know about is the religious angle. See, after the religious angle, after the Catholic Church more or less was no longer a factor in France, the Enlightenment intellectuals that were a major part of it essentially found themselves having to debate what they were going to do to replace it. On the one hand, you had a group known as the Cult of Reason. These guys were essentially atheists. It was more or less a state atheism, more or less, or sort of a kind of precursor to the idea of state atheism. Basically, what they did, really more than anything, is they would go into churches, they would take down all the religious iconography, and then they would have people go to, they would turn them into what they called temples of reason, where they would then like go to go into these places and they would like hold debates, talk about philosophy, have lectures on philosophy, stuff like that, that would replace like sermons and church services and stuff like that. But it didn't really last that long. It lasted barely a year. And by 1794, other factors within the revolution, specifically the Jacobins, which were led by Maximilian Robespierre, managed to more or less take command, and they decided to replace it with what has become probably the epitome of the excesses of the French Revolution. It was called the Cult of the Supreme Being. Imagine a religion that was created by a committee. Generic, vague, doesn't really have a whole lot that it considers to be hard tenets or theological ideas. It's all basically just a religion that's founded on deism, but given like the pomp and circumstance of the old Catholic Church. That was essentially the Cult of the Supreme Being. See, Robespierre was very much a deist. And although he was no friend of Catholicism, he did not like atheism either. In his mind, you needed some sort of supreme being or God to make sure that social order could exist. So he decided to more or less start a committee that invented the Cult of the Supreme Being. It had three main, more or less, I guess you could say, tenets, more or less, about what defined it. Basically, the existence of the Supreme Being and the immortality of the soul, declaration that the best service of the Supreme Being is the practice of man's duties, and that the most important of these duties is the detestation of bad faith and tyranny by punishing tyrants and traitors, by caring for the importunate, respecting the weak, defending the oppressed, doing unto others all the good one can, and not being unjust towards anyone. You know, in hindsight, not necessarily a bad concept. Like, as far as religion goes, like, yeah, I can deal with this one. But it was also something of a political ploy as well. See, Robespierre at the time was getting really fed up with like the hard radicals that were in this group, the ones that helped to sort of more or less give birth to the Cult of Reason. And so he ended up using the Cult of Supreme Being as sort of a way to not only reverse the sort of wholesale de-Christianization process that had been going on, it was also something that he could use as leverage against the more radical members. It was also pretty much at the time when Robespierre was probably at the absolute pinnacle of like his national prominence in the political sphere. The thing about Robespierre that a lot of like bad historiography oftentimes has been is that Robespierre was like this dictatorial figure who basically reigned over the entirety of France with like an iron fist, which isn't really true. The politics of the Reign of Terror are a lot more complicated than that. It's just that because how influential he was, it made him a really easy target to like put shoulder all the blame of the terror after he, you know, finally fell from grace. But one of the really big reasons he finally ended up falling from grace and why this is usually called the pinnacle of his power is because he ended up basically heading up the Festival of Supreme Being, which was this vaguely religious-like pageant and festival that was held in 1794, where he basically took up the designing and organizing of the entire festivities. And I'm going to read this one from Wikipedia. Witnesses state that throughout the festival, Robespierre beamed with joy. He was able to speak of the things about which he was passionate, including virtue, nature, deist beliefs, and his disagreements with atheism. The procession then ended on the Champ de Mars. The convention climbed to the summit where a liberty tree had been planted. Dressed in a sky blue coat and Nanking trousers, Robespierre delivered two speeches in which he emphasized his concept of a supreme being. There would be no Christ nor no Muhammad. Someone was heard saying, quote, "Look at the blackguard. It's not enough for him to be mastered. He has to be a god." According to him, Robespierre proclaimed to believe in the supreme being and who only believed in the power of crime. Robespierre was also criticized by Vadier, Barrère, Courtauld, and Fouché, members of the Committee of General Security. Joseph Fouché had predicted to him his approaching fall. And it would be. Basically, a few months after this, we have what was called the Thermidorian Reaction, where Robespierre was arrested, then tried to escape, was shot in the jaw, and finally guillotined in 1794 on the 28th of July. The Cult of Supreme Being itself was officially banned by Emperor Napoleon I on the 8th of April 1802 with his Law on Cults of 18 Germinal Year X. So yeah, that is sort of one of the weird, sort of probably arguably the weirdest aspect of the French Revolution during its probably its oddest time period. And sort of an example of like what happens when people are encircled by all sides, they're incredibly scared, and they just start acting out, trying to come up with the wackiest shit they possibly can because they're either going for broke or they might be slowly losing their sanity. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, with that, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we move on to our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week has to do with Israel. They claim they have killed one of the leaders of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar, in Gaza.
Yeah, it's... I guess nice for them because they finally did the thing that they wanted to do.
Yeah.
Get back at the man that orchestrated the attack.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, kind of the viewpoint that we have as Americans is seeing our vengeance for Osama bin Laden took a considerably much longer time and involved two different wars essentially going on. I don't know that it was worth it for the tens of thousands of kids and adults and families that have been wiped out of existence in the search of this. So Israel got their justice.
Mm.
But I feel like they've also, let's say Benjamin Netanyahu has kind of made himself into a man of that guy's stature at this point.
Mm-hmm.
As essentially a leader of a terrorist organization with the IDF.
Yeah.
Because, I learned about this because of the tweets of the IDF and Israel kind of being very cheeky and pithy about this in a way that was like, yeah, this makes you guys seem worse.
Mm.
Like you're doing this for social media cred, which,
mm.
to be fair, has been a lot of what IDF has been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And their soldiers, you know, recording videos and such to put up on TikTok
mm-hmm.
and Twitter to brag about the awful things they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that's like, yeah, cool, because this guy did not deserve any sympathy, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I don't think any real good has been done
mm-hmm.
In the net positive sense.
Mm-hmm.
They've just essentially bulldozed large portions of the Gaza Strip and much of what land is left for Palestinians
mm-hmm.
and are obviously going to take control of that land in spite of ceasefires that they've signed in the past saying they wouldn't do that stuff, but
mm-hmm.
they've been slowly creeping in on that.
Yeah.
Especially daring somebody to stop them.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Because we know that Benjamin Netanyahu does not give a damn about the hostages
mm-hmm.
that are still out there. They're just using that as an excuse to
mm-hmm.
lay waste to much of Palestinian land and now Lebanon land
mm-hmm.
For their search for vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Kind of thing where it's like, there's a little bit of positive there, but
yeah,
that it's been just over a year of what's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be like celebratory, especially in like the way that we as a nation were when Osama bin Laden was killed.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount of destruction that went into that, we're probably as a nation much more
mm-hmm.
Naive or disinterested in what was going on, because that was not obviously being reported and documented in ways that we could see
mm-hmm.
throughout that entire process. So
mm-hmm.
not like what's been going on here where you could learn most everything that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. And yeah. Honestly, let's be honest. They had been wanting to encroach and claim Gaza forever. It was just that this finally gave them the excuse to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Next up, you guys may remember that school shooting that happened in a high school here in my state of Georgia a little while back. Well, the son that was responsible for it and his negligent reprobate father are both being indicted on murder charges in the school shooting.
Yeah. The son was indicted, let's see,
mm-hmm.
indicted by the grand jury on a total of 55 counts.
Mm-hmm.
including 4 counts of malice murder, 4 counts of felony murder, plus aggravated assault mm-hmm. and cruelty to children. His father faces 29 counts, including second-degree murder, involuntary manslaughter, and reckless conduct.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, they've been indicted in separate indictments. They've not processed the indictments just yet, so the documents like it wouldn't be available until today.
Mm-hmm.
Both are scheduled to appear for arraignment on November 21st, when each would formally enter a plea.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The father is being held in Barrow County Jail. Son is charged as an adult, but is being held in a juvenile detention center in Gainesville.
Mm-hmm.
Neither sought to be released on bail, and their lawyers have previously declined comments. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it seems like this will be a bit ongoing, as we haven't gotten to the point of them being sentenced or anything yet,
mm-hmm.
but I assume both are probably going to be in prison for the rest of their lives,
mm-hmm.
Which is deserving.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, that is happening. And now we also have a bunch of new lawsuits going against Sean P. Diddy Combs.
Yeah, it seems like six people have filed lawsuits against him.
Mm-hmm.
See, for raping women, sexually assaulting men, and molesting a 16-year-old boy.
Mm-hmm.
At least six lawsuits were filed against him in federal court in Manhattan. They were filed anonymously, two by women identified as Jane Doe's, and four by men identified as John Doe's.
Mm-hmm.
They're part of a what their lawyers are saying is a group of more than 100 alleged victims who are in the process of taking legal action against Combs in the wake of his sex trafficking arrest last month.
Mm-hmm.
One of the John Does, a man living in North Carolina, alleges that Combs fondled his genitals when he was 16 at one of the rapper's famous white parties in Long Island's Hamptons in 1998. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, there's a lot more here if you want to read it in detail, but yeah. A lot of terrible stuff happened.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least still being alleged to have happened. So we'll see how that stuff goes. But yeah, I don't know how he gets
mm-hmm.
through the arrests and indictments and all that
mm-hmm.
Without going to prison for a considerable amount of time, if not the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
Yeah. So we got that, and then we got another one of those stories where it's like, yeah, pile it on the top of all the others. The Archdiocese of Los Angeles has agreed to pay $880 million to settle sexual abuse claims.
Yeah, involving 1,353 people.
Yep.
Attorneys for 1,353 people who alleged they suffered horrific abuse. At the hands of local Catholic priests, reached settlement after months of negotiations with the Archdiocese.
Mm-hmm.
That's an incredible amount of money. Almost $1 billion.
Yep.
If you need to know the scale of the abuses here, and obviously this is not all of them that have suffered.
Mm-hmm.
These are the ones that were willing to step forward as part of this lawsuit. Yeah, this agreement caps a quarter century of litigation against the most populous archdiocese in the United States.
Yeah.
Let's see. Under the settlement, the plaintiffs will engage in a process that will not involve the archdiocese
mm-hmm.
to allocate the settlement among amounts among the participants. The archdiocese has previously paid $740 million. Dollars to victims in various settlements and had pledged to better protect its church members, so this settlement would put the total payout at more than $1.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
That's a staggering sum. Awful stuff happened, but at least some of these people will get some amount of justice.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
So, yeah. And last but not least, we have this really just stupid fucking story that is infuriating. So Elon Musk has this ongoing lawsuit against Media Matters. And it turns out that the judge in that case actually owns stock in Tesla, and they're refusing to recuse themselves.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, he was buying and selling stock in Musk's Tesla company in 2023, the year Musk filed the suit, according to financial disclosure reports recently made public.
Mm.
This is U.S. District Judge Reed O'Connor of the Northern District of Texas.
Mm.
Had made an investment in August in Tesla of between $15,001 and $50,000.
Mm.
O'Connor has delivered a string of decisions in the Media Matters lawsuit in favor of Musk. Mm. Argues the advocacy group disparaged X, his social media site.
Mm-hmm.
That investment was revealed in a 2022 financial disclosure form required of all federal judges. But questions remained about whether the judge could have later sold his stock in Tesla. Mm-hmm. So whether that happened before or after O'Connor accepted the Media Matters case in November 2023.
Mm-hmm.
While Tesla's not directly part of Musk's Media Matters suit, legal ethics experts called on O'Connor recused himself from the case since the outcome of a lawsuit involving one of Musk's company could in turn have an effect on the stock value of another part of his empire,
mm-hmm.
including electric vehicle company Tesla, which represents the majority of his wealth. But new public financial disclosure form With the Administrative Office of the U.S. Courts covering 2023's calendar year shows that Connor bought and sold Tesla stock that year, with his position in Tesla still totaling up to $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
All three transactions were made before November. Connor bought Tesla stock in January, sold some in June, and bought again in September. As far as we know, he still has stock there.
Mm-hmm.
He has not bought or sold Tesla stock in the first 3 months of 2024. So yeah, this certainly looks bad. And I believe the X terms of service has indicated that if you have legal issues with X, that you have to go to, all legal disputes are to be filed in the federal court for the Northern District of Texas or state court in Tarrant County outside of Dallas. Even though the headquarters for X is in the Austin area, it's covered by the federal court for Western Texas.
Mm.
So, yeah. Just looks real shady with all this. And
yeah,
obviously the judge has a tangential financial interest in this case.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like he should be recused, but he's refusing to do so. And so, yeah, that's the least icky of all these shitty stories.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still shitty. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that is the assholes of the week. Fortunately, it's not all terrible, because we do have some heroes of the week to discuss. For one, our first heroes of the week are about a little more over 800 military personnel who have been given honorable discharges after reversals of, quote, don't ask, don't tell punishments. Now, for those of you who were listening who might be a little too young to know what that was, don't ask, don't tell was a policy that started under President Clinton. Essentially, for a long time in the United States, if you were discovered to have be gay or whatever, you could be dishonorably discharged because it was believed that you were a security risk.
Yeah.
Well, after the Soviet Union fell in 1991, this whole idea became redundant. So the debate began on whether or not, you know, should we lift that and just allow openly gay people in the military? Well, Clinton's, at least on the surface, said that should be what happened. But, you know, this was the early 90s that we're talking about. And, you know, the Christian Coalition Reagan bullshit was still very much in effect. So the compromise they ended up coming up with was don't ask, don't tell, which is, nobody is allowed to ask you what your sexual orientation is, but in turn, you're not allowed to tell anyone of your own free will.
Yeah, don't flaunt it.
Yeah.
Which is probably hard to hide from people, consider.
Yeah, because don't flaunt it is a very broad and arbitrary classification.
Especially with people you are training and working with closely, constantly, and obviously sleeping with many of them in the same rooms.
Yeah. And of course, as pretty much most military personnel who served during that area will tell you, it was honestly asinine. Like, it didn't really solve anything at all. It just made the issue even more complicated.
Yeah. And you can watch, like, shows of that era, mm-hmm. where they make jokes about it.
Yeah.
Because it's like people that are obviously gay happen to be like, well, no, I'm not gay.
Mm-hmm.
It became like a sitcom punchline, essentially, yep. Which is how you know it's a stupid policy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it got repealed in 2011 during the Obama administration.
Yeah.
I guess essentially part of this was the 1951 Uniform Code of Military Justices, Article 125. That criminalized consensual gay sex.
Yeah.
And so they essentially modified it to be limited to non-consensual gay sex, which is a very silly
law
to make. Like, don't assault people, which is like, okay.
Yeah.
We won't. That seems...
It was one of those weird compromises they had to do with the political parts. yeah. of American government. Because here's the thing, the military part of American government, and especially like, you know, foreign affairs and all that stuff, they are ruthlessly pragmatic when it comes to social issues, which is kind of why the conservative parts of American government and politics are always talking about how, you know, the State Department is infested with liberals. It's kind of because when you're involved in international affairs, all this weird social and cultural war shit is just really stupid. It doesn't solve anything.
Yeah. They're all there to do a job, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's the main thing they care about.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when they're, you know, getting sent off for months or years on end.
Yeah.
The political parts of it, they don't care about, much like you do when you're working for any big company where there's a corporate part making judgments and rules and such, and you're like, those people are fucking idiots. We're just here to do this job. But
yeah. But anyway, basically what you were saying, it was largely a relic of the Cold War. Cause it was believed that if you were gay and you were involved in any kind of relationship, that would apply for what they used to call compromat, for like that the Soviets could, or their agents could, use as blackmail material. So yeah, it was stupid then. It became increasingly stupid after the Soviet Union collapsed. So anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, here, last year, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin ordered a review of cases of former service members who might have been affected by the policy.
Mm-hmm.
The Pentagon estimates about 13,500 service members in total were released from military service under Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Mm.
With the review and upgrades of more than 800 troops announced on Tuesday, mm-hmm. the Pentagon said that about 96% of them,
mm-hmm.
The total number were affected by the policy, now have received an honorable discharge. Not every case needed review. Some of those personnel either did not serve long enough to qualify for benefits. Mm-hmm. They were released with an honorable discharge at the time. They already had their discharges upgraded through other means, or they did not qualify for an upgrade due to other violations.
Mm-hmm.
So doing about as good as you can to right those wrongs and get a number of people better benefits, essentially. Mm-hmm. So that's good news in the end. Doing right by these people.
Mm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, and we also have this story that basically is a new rule from the Federal Trade Commission that requires services to make canceling subscriptions as easy as signing up for them. And thank God, because anybody who's tried to end cancel a subscription with Amazon knows that it can be a goddamn minefield.
Yeah, especially when you get into the utilities of cable and internet stuff, that especially those love to make it really easy to sign up for service.
Mm-hmm.
And then make you call the customer service, and people dread that because obviously you're going to get into negotiations of like, well, what if we give you this offer and this one and add this thing for free that lasts for X amount of time and will lead to more money in the long run if you treat it like every other subscription service where you forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, that's all fucked up. You should just be able to cancel it, because it, especially in this day and age where it's all just entries in a computer system, that mm-hmm. should just be able to be turned off at will.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, federal regulators say they receive around 70 complaints a day about charges for mm-hmm. subscriptions that are either arduous to cancel or that people didn't realize they accepted in the first place, which I assume must be like from trials and such. But now a new U.S. rule will require retailers, gyms, and other businesses to make canceling subscriptions as easy as enrolling in them, and to make the subscription process more transparent. Mm. The FTC on Wednesday released a final rule called Click to Cancel, which says online subscriptions should require the same number of clicks to end as they do to sign up.
Mm-hmm.
An in-person sign-up should have an option to cancel online or over the phone. The new rule also directs companies to give people a clear idea of the exact terms before they sign up so they don't feel tricked or trapped into subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
Numerous business groups and the FTC's Republican commissioners opposed the rule, arguing that the agency overstepped its legal authority, passed new burdensome requirements days before the election. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday said the regulators made a power grab, micromanaged business decisions, which U.S. Chamber of Commerce, not as potentially good of a group as you might think from the name.
Mm.
They're very much essentially like a lobbying group for businesses.
Yeah.
Corporations, so they don't have consumers' rights in mind on anything that they're doing. So that's why they're claiming this is a power grab. So yeah, good news. Let's see, most of the new requirements will go into effect in about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
They also give the FTC more power to help consumers get their money back from violating companies. Mm-hmm. Final version of the rule did not include a previously proposed requirement for automatically remind us, which I think is that is definitely one of the tricky things that companies don't do, is like send you an email of like, we charged you for this much because of your subscription kind of thing. They just let it go so that you forget it ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
Then you realize checking your, you know, statements or whatever is like, oh, I still have this shit. I need to go cancel that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, paying for months for a subscription you weren't using. So, you know, this is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah. Moving on from there, we're now moving on to the from the show proper to the proper show proper. And our first story for the night has to do with this bizarre thing that's going on where a bunch of Indian nationals have been attempting to murder like Sikh political activists in both the U.S. and Canada. So just to make a really complicated story somewhat simple, after India gained its independence, there was a partition that happened. Where the modern day countries of what are called Pakistan and what is now called Bangladesh were established. Now, Bangladesh, to make an even longer story really, really short, they were originally another Pakistan until they decided to sort of step up and make their own country. And then there was like this like weird war between them and Pakistan that happened. There was like a genocide and happened and all this other shit. But anyway, the point is, because of this partition, India has always had this issue with all of these various religious nationalist groups that have hopped up every so often. And in India, one of those has to do with the Sikhs. There is a group of Sikhs that have been actively fighting for a Sikh homeland, essentially, within India. And the current Indian government is, of course, a hardline authoritarian conservative government that are led by Hindu nationalists. And you may have heard recently that one of their agents killed a Sikh activist in Canada. Well, turns out they actually tried to kill a Sikh nationalist here in the U.S., but it was actually thwarted by the American government.
Yeah, the DOJ has charged, Akash Yadav. I was on sale in federal court in Manhattan on Thursday. That points to a direct link between the Indian government and what prosecutors say was a murder-for-hire scheme on American soil. As you said, Canada's dealing with the same issue as they are having all sorts of seemingly like manufactured turmoil from it. But it seems like as Trudeau has had the Indian diplomats sent away, kicked them out of the country, and India's vowing retribution and all that, and there are people calling for Trudeau to resign. I don't know if it's related to that directly, but I'm sure there's a lot of stuff going on related to that, especially because I think he had some statements he was putting into the record, basically also claiming that like Jordan Peterson and Tucker Carlson are agents of Russia. Might be RT specifically, but they are getting some money from the Russian government to do what they're doing. But yeah, this is an arm of the Indian government, essentially hiring people to try to take out particular Sikh activists that are pushing for. There's the one guy that was killed. The alleged target was the General Council of Sikhs for Justice. And an advocate for the creation of a Sikh state carved out from northern India. So he was obviously happy to have the U.S. government save his life. But yeah, one of his associates was unfortunately killed in Canada. Canadian authorities have arrested four Indian nationals in connection with Hardeep Singh Nijjar's murder. Canada said that India's top diplomat in the country and five other Indian diplomats were persons of interest. Investigation and Canada expelled all six of them. They've also found evidence that Indian diplomats have been involved in a campaign against Canadian citizens. So that's also really bad. So yeah, there's this whole weird range of actions being taken by India that is kind of wild to see unfold. I'll be curious to see how this continues on, how things go with Indian and U.S.-Canada relations. So that's been pretty interesting to see how this stuff has been going on.
Yeah. So, yeah, moving on from there. We also have another potential shooter involving another potential shooting or assassination attempt on President Trump. There was another weird event like this that happened near the rally he had at Coachella. Whether or not it was actually like he was trying to kill him or if it was just a sense of circumstances, it's just odd.
Yeah. Because basically they had somebody that was stopped at an interior checkpoint at Coachella that had... he was illegally in possession of a shotgun, a loaded handgun, and a high-capacity magazine. He also had numerous passports and driver's licenses under different names, and his SUV had fake plates. It's all a pretty big flag, red flag there. So he was stopped and arrested. Let's see. He was described as a lunatic and a member of Sovereign Citizen. They say here they are considered a far-right group. I wouldn't say it's a militant group, but it's just a group that doesn't believe in government and government control.
It's a little bit more complicated than that, but yeah, that's more or less the long and short of it.
Yeah, so it seems like another case of somebody that's in the far-right that dislikes Trump a lot, which is, like, fair.
Yeah.
Method going to dealing with that, maybe not fair. But yeah, don't let the Trump's people try to bring this up as another attempt on his life.
Yeah.
That close. And obviously you can see from the picture in this article, there are men stationed up in the back to try to catch anybody that could be a potential shooter. But yeah, weird situation, but luckily nothing happened because of the security measures that they had going on. So there you go. I guess this was the event where what's his name? Dennis Quaid was there revealing himself as a MAGA Trumper. I was like, all right, congratulations. You are fully morphing into your brother.
Yep.
He was not even in the U.S. anymore because he just refused to pay taxes and fled the country.
Yep. But yeah, so that happened. And speaking of Trump and weirdness, he was going to give what was going to be a town hall event. And like a couple of questions into it, he just decided, hey, you know what? Who wants more? We don't want any more questions. Let's just listen to some music. And it was weird. It was bizarre.
The first song was Ave Maria, which is like, why is he playing a foreign language song, first off? That goes against his entire campaign's anti-immigrant thing. And it's also opera, which is not a thing you would... I would say Trump has probably been to an opera before, but paying attention to it, he definitely would not have been. Could have been some some sort of business thing
mm-hmm.
of meeting somebody there, but he would not have ever paid attention to learn anything about what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this was just a weird of an event. Played a bunch of songs for like 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah,
I guess. And I think this was the event that the air conditioning was off in this room they were in, this hall or whatever it was, and people were passing out from the heat.
Yeah.
And yelling that they needed help and that they should turn off the turn on the air conditioning as he was just standing there looking around. So yeah, as he joked, personally, I enjoy this. We lose weight. We could do this, lose 4 or 5 pounds.
Mm.
Like if you're losing 4 or 5 pounds in an hour or so, the shit's gone bad.
Yeah.
It's a steam room levels of extreme heat, but worse. But yeah, this is called into question of like, what the hell is Trump's mental state here? But nobody in the mainstream media seems to care. They're treating like, well, he had an impromptu concert.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not how that works.
Nope.
He brought people here to answer questions about his policies.
Mm-hmm.
He decided, fuck that. I want to listen to Ave Maria. Which is like, what is going on? Brain's mush at this point.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at with the election.
Yeah, so that's where we're there now. Anyway, next up, the Supreme Court of the state of Nebraska has cleared the way for former felons to get back their right to vote.
Yeah. Because this was a whole situation because, let me see here. I think it was that, I think the state government had passed new laws to allow felons to get the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And then the, yeah, let me see here. Let's see. And yeah, the Secretary of State, Robert Evenin, directed election officials to stop registering former felons. Before this law went to effect, his order followed an opinion from the state's Attorney General, Mike Hilgers, that said LB 20 was unconstitutional because only the state's Board of Pardons, not the legislature, could restore felons' voting rights. The board is currently made of Evenin, Hilgers, and Governor Jim Pillen, all Republicans.
Yeah.
So that's very much like a, oh, you've rigged this whole process. But the Supreme Court, in their ruling, though, a majority of the state's Supreme Court panels of judges found Evenin was unable to establish his defense that the statutes were unconstitutional. So the court ordered Evenin to remove any disqualification on registration he has imposed as not contained within LB 20 and to comply with the new state law ahead of the election. And of course, in the in response, Evenin said the state's the Supreme Court has resolved this issue and we are following the requirements of the decision. For the counties across the state, we are working to ensure that those who are made eligible to register to vote under LB 20 may now do so. I imagine part of this was probably trying to delay this as much as possible so it didn't get resolved until after the election. He failed in that part. So yeah, they got the deadline to register to vote online is today, the 18th. But voters have until the 25th to register by mail or in person. So hopefully those people get to that. And if you're wondering how many people it is, I think it's like 700 or 800 people. It's not that much, but could very much help in various districts and whatnot. So hopefully those people who exercise the right to vote, because it is important.
Yes. And ultimately, to be completely honest, though, I can, on the surface, I can understand the logic of doing, of like considering it like a result of becoming a felon of losing it. But the problem is if you think about that for another few minutes, you realize how basically ass backwards it is, because the whole idea of like prison is that you're trying to both punish a crime, but also to prepare the individual to reintegrate into society. But without political franchise, you cannot be reintegrated into society. You just can't.
Yeah. And it's like, that seems like an excessive punishment beyond what they were already required to do.
Yeah. You know, the idea is that after you've served your sentence, you have paid your debt to society. So the fact that you still have to deal with this these other stimulations that basically last you into the grave, you haven't been able to pay your debt. You're essentially a debtor until you die.
Yeah, because you're already dealing with the stigma of, you know, on various applications and forms you fill out, having to put that down. What that does to your prospects of becoming a, you know, upstanding citizen. But yeah, voting should be one of those core tenets of things that you should be able to do as long as there's no outstanding issue like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could see a little bit of a cool down time period, but
yeah,
that's obviously contingent on when you get out.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. And then we got some science news. NASA's Europa Clipper spacecraft is now on its way to study the icy moon of Jupiter.
Yeah. So yeah, that launched on Monday. That'll take about 6 years to get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a solar-powered spacecraft. Let's see that. Yeah. It was sent on a SpaceX Falcon Heavy rocket.
Mm-hmm.
Expected to reach Jupiter in April 2030 to study Europa. The icy surface to moon, which is roughly the size of Earth's moon, and thought to have ingredients for life, such as water. Mainly that's a lot of the stuff under the ice is sort of water oceans of sorts. But we don't necessarily know exactly what is in there, what kind of materials, clarity of the water, all that kind of stuff. Obviously this thing's going to land and do anything there, but it's going to give us a much closer look at what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's carrying 9 science instruments, including 2 that will catch dust and gas, and a gravity experiment that uses telecommunication systems. Weighs 13,000 pounds, almost half of which is fuel. Has 24 engines and about the length of a basketball court when its solar arrays are open.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Expect to reach Mars in February 2025. And swing back by Earth in 2026 to give Europa Clipper enough energy to reach Jupiter. So it's going to be like a slingshot orbit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that'll be cool to see what data it gets.
Yeah. And now we're moving on to the entertainment portion of the show. First and foremost, Disney Plus is getting a new Beatles documentary on November 29th.
Yeah, called Beatles 64. So it's finally in 3D. But yeah. Mm-hmm. As from producer Martin Scorsese and director David Tedeschi. It'll be out November 29th. The features never before seen footage of the band and its legions of young fans during the height of the Beatlemania.
Mm-hmm.
It also includes new interviews with 2 surviving Beatles, Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr.
Mm-hmm.
It follows the boys as they land in New York City in February 1964 and solidify their status as the biggest band in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to promise to tell a more intimate behind-the-scenes story of the Fab Four as they debut on the Ed Sullivan Show, with more than 73 million viewers, which back then was the most watched television event of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds neat.
Yeah. And speaking of Disney, it turns out they're also making a Prince Charming movie, because, of course, not. Why not?
Yeah. We don't know if this is live action or animated, but it does have Paul King at the helm to direct it, who did the first 2 mm-hmm. Paddington movies and the recent Wonka movie. So that's some... seems like it should make for a solid movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Prince Charming is specifically the love interest of Cinderella, but is sort of the archetype character that is saving the damsel in distress in many of the Disney movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Cinderella, Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, Rapunzel, any of those kind of stories are kind of based on that. Yeah, this project will not be specifically linked to the curfew-breaking Princess Cinderella. But yeah, that's all the details we have. It's just the director and the title sent, or the subject of this movie. So nothing really else going on there. But yeah, that could be interesting. Depending on sort of what the story is about. But
yeah,
we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, we also got this news. It looks like the Joker sequel end up as a big financial box office bomb with its theatrical run. Which I think probably may have sort of been the intention of the filmmaker, because by all intents and purposes, he wanted to torch the franchise and run after he sort of saw the kind of fan base that the first movie was getting. But yeah,
It seems like it'd be better for your career not to do this.
Yeah, you would think so.
Let's just not make another one.
Yeah.
Because coming off of that, you would have better prospects for the doing whatever you want after that. But
yeah.
But yeah, the first one hits, let's see, $96.2 million domestically, and $248.4 million globally after 3 days of release. After 2 weeks here globally, 2 weeks of release, $51.5 million domestically and $165 million globally, which is pretty bad. The sequel will earn nearly as much as the original did by the end of its theatrical run, with tickets projected to stall at a lifetime gross of $65 million domestically and $210 to $215 million globally, which is a problem when the movie itself costs $200 million to produce and about $100 million to market and distribute. So it won't get anywhere close to the $450 million needed to break even this theatrical run, because ticket sales are split with the theater owners. So supposedly sources are saying it'll break even at $375 million, which is not going to be hit by a theater run. Maybe with a more normal market, they might do better as like a at DVD and Blu-ray releases. But obviously many studios or many retailers are getting out of that market. So, yeah. Not great for them.
Nope.
Which is not a huge surprise, because the movie is just seemingly very weird.
Yeah.
Weird way to go with its, not a terrible idea, but it's just a weird approach to it all.
Yeah. And next up, we got a teaser trailer for Netflix's The Electric State.
Yeah, this is the new Russo Brothers movie. Based on a series of illustrations from Simon Stålenhag.
Yep. I'm familiar with it.
I don't know how much story there is to any of that, but
I've got his story into the ones he's doing, though it tends to be kind of vague, but it's there. Yeah. And his stuff is very evocative, so
yeah. So this seems neat. It is set in the aftermath of a robot uprising in an alternate version of the 90s.
Yeah.
Where essentially, like, I guess humanity had robot, like, servants and whatnot that tried to strike out on their own and revolt against the humans, and that did not go well. And so this movie here follows an orphan teenager, which is Millie Bobby Brown, ventures across the American West with a cartoon-inspired robot, a smuggler, which I believe is Chris Platt, and his sidekick in search of her younger brother. Got a lot of good actors in here, along with Millie Bobby Brown and Chris Pratt. There's Kei Hu Kwan, Jason Alexander, Woody Norman, Giancarlo Esposito, and Stanley Tucci. Doing voices for robots, Woody Harrelson, Anthony Mackie, Brian Cox, Jenny Slate, Hank Azaria, Coleman Domingo, and Alan Tudyk. So a lot of good talent here. The trailer looks pretty decent. Kind of tough to get great vibes here, but because it's just a teaser trailer of just random bits from it. But yeah, this will be on Netflix March 14th. So next spring, so that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and on top of that, we also got a teaser trailer for Wallace and Gromit: Vengeance Most Foul.
Yeah, the next big Wallace and Gromit movie, which is looking pretty cool. Yeah, it takes place. I assume it's the latest in the storyline. The Penguin Feathers McGraw is back after going to prison in the one special that they did. Yeah. It looks pretty neat. They're dealing with the threat of this new old villain coming back. Dealing with all kinds of wild stuff going on. So yeah, I'm excited for this. This will be out January 3rd. So that's good to see.
And last but not least, we got an official trailer for Wolfman.
Yeah, this is a new interpretation of the Wolfman, like Universal Monster story of sorts. They got some interesting people working on it. Writer-director Leigh Whannell, who worked on The Invisible Man a handful of years ago. I believe this is the person that was also kind of co-creator of Saw.
Maybe.
I think that was what I read. That was her kind of legacy there. So she's got plenty of chops, or he does, has plenty of chops on the whole thing here. Is working with his, he was one of the co-creators of the Saw franchise. So yeah, has a lot of good work in this genre. And so yeah, Wolfman, the trailer here, is a bit of an interesting trailer. Features Christopher Abbott, who inherits his remote childhood home in rural Oregon after his own father vanishes and is presumed dead, with his marriage to his high-powered wife. Praying, he persuades her to take a break from the city and visit property with their young daughter. But as they approach the farmhouse in the dead of night, they're attacked by an unseen animal, and in desperate escape, barricade themselves inside the home as the creature prowls the perimeter. Then as things go on, he starts transforming into, I assume, the Wolfman. And they have to deal with dual threats.
Yep.
Potentially, and so that's kind of the interesting premise they're going with here. So yeah, and this is produced by Blumhouse, so they got some good stuff going on.
Yeah,
seems like it might be better than the way that the Universal Monster Universe thing was starting with the Mummy.
Oh, most certainly.
But yeah, this will be out on January 17th.
Yeah. But yeah, with that, I do believe we have got ourselves a show, folks. Yes, we do. We have got ourselves a show. So we'd like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, something you want us to run on the air, get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Google Podcasts, you can catch our little bit Apple Podcasts. Apple Podcast. You can catch our little bit of Unscripted Shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, just wait a few minutes. We will be. And fortunately now, we aren't having issues with Archive anymore. At least more or less not. Last I checked, they were kind of in a read-only mode kind of thing. Because as you don't know, they kind of had like a hack that happened or something or other.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not uploading through there at the moment. It'll be on the Day Zero feed for now.
Yeah, it'll be on the Day Zero feed for right now. We will eventually go back there when it's safe to do again. But anyway, we're going to go ahead and wind it down here. Big thanks once again to Chris Sologi for joining me on this little bit of craziness. And if you out there who are listening, be there a new listener or a veteran, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your families, your casual acquaintances, your coworkers, your mortal enemies, or anywhere in between. Hopefully someone that, you know, you'll won't have problems having a conversation with when your, you know, Thanksgiving comes around. Because boy, oh boy, it is going to be fun this year. I am dreading Thanksgiving this year. You have no idea. Good night, everybody.